Blog Talk Radio.
This is a program for all America.
Oh, welcome aboard. It is the Amy Beth Erkowitz Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. How are you? Hope you had a great weekend. A little crisp nip of fall in the air in my neighborhood. Tough day in the nation's capital. I don't know if you've heard this news. Apparently there has been a shooting at the Navy Yard. It is apparently over now. The shooter, I believe, is dead. Several people injured. The national news cable, they've been covering it, so we'll keep you updated if we hear anything breaking. And I guess the area schools are also on lockdown. It's a tough day. Another tough Monday in the nation's capital. We'll see what happens. If we hear anything breaking, we'll certainly apprise you of it during this hour. If you're listening live on Monday, the number's in motion at 347-857-4505 for our free flow pop culture convo a bit later. Lots to talk about. I know folks are doing our Inspiration to Action Challenge. Never too late to join that bandwagon. We'll talk about how you're doing and get to the next step. And also, here's a question for you. What's more conducive to creativity, chaos or order? I think I knew the answer before I took a look at two new studies that are out, but we'll discuss that a bit later. And meet Ed Opperman. He is an interesting character, a celebrity cyber sleuth who has been on the trail of such impressive big-name cases like the George Zimmerman trial. He was involved in that. He also has some news about why he thinks this recent escapade with Zimmerman's smashed iPad may not be the end of it, that skirmish Zimmerman and his estranged wife Shelley had last week. We'll find out why he thinks they can actually recover that data. He's also been involved in the Tiger Woods case, Todd and Sarah Palin, Ashton Kutcher. If you're doing some hanky-panky, people are watching you, and you don't want this guy in your tail, that's for sure. He'll join us later. But first, it's Monday. It's a great time to sort of unwind and get a little inspiration. What better way to do it than start with some music? I want to introduce you to a young woman who is an up-and-coming indie singer-songwriter, Katie Hines. We're going to listen to one of her songs, and then we'll talk to her about her journey and her inspirations and influences. This one is called Right Through You. It's Katie Hines opening up the Monday edition of the Amy Beth Erkowitz Show. Give a listen. shines, I can see right through you on the Amy Bedorkowy Show. Just realize that song could actually fit in nicely with our next guest, Ed Opperman, as well, because he can see right through you. Hey, Katie Hines, a pleasure to welcome you to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Amy Beth. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you here. What a great sound you have. You describe yourself as an L.A. girl who originally came from Alabama, so you have all these great influences, pop music, electronic, a little bit of a southern twang in there. Talk to us about your journey. How did you get from Alabama to L.A.? Anyway,
well,
how did that start?
Well, I grew up in Alabama. I lived there for 22 years. I had an awesome upbringing, very supportive parents. I grew up singing. And I entered a few competitions. I also did a bunch of sports. I was a pretty active child. And then I went to college in Alabama at the University of Alabama at Birmingham for theater. So I always thought I was going to go to New York. And then one day my heart just said, nope, you need to go to New York later if you're going to go to L.A. first. I had never even been to L.A. And somehow I convinced my parents that it was a good idea, and they were on board. And so me and my mom drove across the country. And originally I was going to do the acting thing. And then I just realized that it really acting is something that I love, and I love the performance aspect of it. But I needed music in my life again. It just had to happen. And so I entered a songwriting workshop with a woman named Judy Stakey, and it changed my life. I realized that was where I wanted that artistic part of me to go and to commit to. So here I am 5 years later.
Here you are. That is amazing. And I think that's so great to follow your dream and really be listening to yourself and what you really want, because you had a couple of things going and you just really evaluated it, or it just sort of happened organically where you realized, hey, this is really where I need to be for now. And, you know, you're young, and who knows, acting may come along as well down the line.
It may, but, you know, I mean, it was tough for me to be honest with myself about that because, you know, when you tell people, well, I'm going to go to L.A. and be an actress, and you tell everyone in your life, you tell all your friends, you tell your whole family, it's tough to kind of go back on that and say, never mind, I'm going to do something else. And so it was kind of getting over myself in that way and just being honest with myself. And it just absolutely changed my life, and I couldn't be happier.
Good for you. And you did it so at such a young age. Good for you, Katie. See, there's a certain point where if you do it when you're young, that's brave and really great. Sometimes people don't do it when they're young, though, and those are the people that come to me as a creativity coach because they're unhappy in the middle of their life, and they say, or sometimes I get young people, too, who are confused, but a lot of times people are just unhappy with where the decisions they made. How did I wind up here? Why am I doing this? Very often it's because they didn't make the decisions that they should have made, maybe. But it's never too late by any means. I mean, we all have to take our own journey and our own path, but how wonderful it is if you can figure that out at a young age and make those adjustments. And look, as we said, it's a long life, and hopefully, knock on wood, and you can have different twists and turns, and you can very often have two and three different endeavors, particularly creative people very often kind of straddle different things as you get success in one field. You never know what may open up, but good for you for doing what you're doing. And, of course, the music industry is such a tough nut to crack, too. I mean, not that Hollywood is any easier than Broadway.
I mean, it's all really tough, but, you know, you got to love it. And that was the important thing with me making the adjustment from fully just going straight acting to jumping over to another tough industry in music is I figured out that I had to really be in love with what I was doing to go up against everything that's out there. I mean, and I think finding your passion is very important. I was very lucky to find it. And I, you know, like I said, I've been singing my whole life. I just hadn't given myself the opportunity to do some songwriting. I always thought, well, that's hard. And I was kind of scared of it. And then I realized that my education in theater and all the background that I got with kind of looking within myself to find all these characters and these stories really helped me with my songwriting. And so it ended up, the acting world actually ended up leading me to this, which I'm grateful for.
Absolutely. Well, that's generally what happens. We lead ourselves. Sometimes we don't even realize that we're getting there, little detours, but very cool indeed. Talk about your musical influences. Who do you find or who have you found as you grew up and now are your, you know, touchstones in the music industry or the music world?
Well, I grew up listening to everything. My parents, when I look back on it, I'm like, man, they had me listen to some pretty cool stuff. Like, I remember very specifically listening to Bob Seger with my dad and, like, some Creedence Clearwater Revival. Me and my mom used to listen to ABBA, and I had a little bit of country in there. You know, I am from Alabama. I really value the storytelling part of country.
Yes.
I feel like it just paints a beautiful picture, and that's what makes people relate. And so, I also love pop music. I mean, one of my favorite girls out right now is Lana Del Rey, and Lily Allen. She's really sassy. I grew up listening to Michael Jackson, Celine Dion. You know, just all across the board. I loved the divas. I loved the pop stars. And, you know, I had my Lisa Loeb phase and all that, where it was like really singer-songwriter-y. Yeah, everybody did. And so, I mean, a major hodgepodge. But for this record, I really focused on, I listened to Lily Allen every single day. And that song in particular, Right Through You, was inspired a lot by her and just her directness with the way her lyrics come across, I love. And they make you laugh, and they kind of paint a picture, and you just feel like you're talking to a friend or listening to a friend. And I really like that in her, and I strive to have that humor and relatability in my music.
Very interesting. Do you find that you're very conscious when you sit down to write a song about how you want it to come out, or does it just sort of organically come out first and then you shape it afterwards?
You know, for me, it kind of happens differently every time. Sometimes I have to sit down and say, okay, I'm going to work on music from 9 to 12, and I'm going to have a riff done by the end of it, and I'm going to do this and that, and I make myself an assignment. Usually, if I do that, I am able to open my heart and my mind up into a creative space. Sometimes, the other day, I woke up in the middle of the night and recorded, I mean, it sounds awful because I'm really like, but I thought of something. It must have just been either in my sleep or I must have woken up and just happened to get this creative little bug. And I ended up staying up for like 30 minutes just kind of writing a few lyrics. So it happens differently every time. But I personally respond well to setting time aside to allow myself to get creative, because I am a girl who's really trying to work for what I want, but that involves me having a couple of jobs, and, you know, I don't have the luxury of being able to write all day long, so sometimes I have to just make the time for it and just let it in.
Brilliant, brilliant. This is what I always tell people. The muse will come to you, but you can't just wait for it to come. Sometimes you have to invite it in. You have to cajole it a little bit. And you really do have to set some time and discipline. A lot of people who romanticize about what the creative process is like really think it just sort of happens. They always say to me, as I'm a writer, they'll say, oh, you're just so lucky you have all these ideas. And I do have a lot of ideas. I have, in fact, sometimes too many ideas if I'd be overloaded.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to find time to harness it. Time to harness that energy.
Absolutely.
And let it come in and make room for the mistakes and allow it to do it. So I think it's so great that you said that you force yourself to do it sometimes. And then other times, that's your reward, by the way, I think, for when you're forcing yourself to get that 30 minutes when you wake up in the middle of the night. You should always have a tape recorder or a digital recorder, whatever they call it now, available. Like Keith Richards, remember? He wrote Satisfaction in the Sleep. He didn't even remember writing it.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
So you never know.
That has happened. It is so... I mean, I keep, you know, I just keep my phone next to me, and I have everything.
Right.
I have everything on there.
Right.
But it's all on your phones, and so. But that's. I was just about to say when I'm going into that creative space where I have given myself an assigned amount of time, sometimes I have to put my phone down because or turn it off and just not let the outside world in because, you know, we all have friends and family that we love to talk to, especially since I'm across the country from the majority of them. If they call, I'm like, oh, I want to talk to her or, you know, whatever. And I just have to commit myself because, you know, if I don't, then and I won't be able to let all that in. And I probably wouldn't have been able to make this record if I hadn't really made myself the time. Because who has time to sit around all day these days? I mean, there are very lucky few who can, and that's where I want to be one day, to where I can be writing all day, every day. That would be my dream, but I'm just not there yet, so I have to make it happen.
Well, you'll never completely be there, probably, because you'll have to perform. Like, even people I talk to who are more established artists who are performers, they have to juggle their performing schedule with their recording schedule and their writing schedule. So there's always going to be a juggling act, even as you get more successful. So you're training yourself well for that. But hopefully you'll be juggling things that you definitely want to do, and they're all related. So what made you go, you sort of did this yourself? You recorded and produced it all yourself. You just decided, you know, I've got to take the bull by the horns. The industry has changed so much where it's easier in some ways to get access to an audience, I guess, get access to digital, equipment and availability, but at the same time, to stand out and to make a living is just as tough or even tougher than it's been in the past. So what made you decide you're just going to go for it?
Well, So I have a lot of people directly in my life that influence me. I have wonderful supportive friends and family, and I also, through my songwriting workshop that I did 4 years ago that I mentioned just completely changed me. I met a girl that's become a really good friend of mine. Her name's Melinda, and she's just a few steps ahead of me, and she had made this wonderful record, and she's recorded. She's a very, very hard worker, always inspired me to work harder. And she had worked with a producer named Taro Petilla, and she said something to me once that stuck with me. She goes, Katie, you have to make something. The way the industry is these days is if you send in a really super low quality demo, someone might listen to it and see your potential, but the odds of music getting to the right hands that you want them to be in are much higher if you go ahead and invest the time and the money to make something quality and get it out there, because a lot of the music industry doesn't have a ton of money to turn into new artists. So we have to do it ourselves so that they have a good product off the bat and they can just kind of tweak it. And so I called Taro, the producer, and I said, you know, I really want to make a record. I don't have Pro Tools or Logic or all of these crazy, you know, production software. Can you help me? And I established a relationship with him to where he allowed me to literally sit there and choose what hi-hat I wanted, choose what string I wanted. And I felt very much a part of the production process, and which made me feel so connected to the music. I mean, I was there, you know, 3-4 times a week for a long hour, just picking the right little noise. And I felt like I learned so much in the process. And, you know, I paid for it, and I worked really, really, really hard. But now I feel like I have this baby that wouldn't be in the world if I didn't work so hard on it. And so really, it was just to make a long response short, it was, I had a lot of influences in my life that really encouraged me to just go for it, because like you said, things don't just plop into your lap. You got to go for them. So I decided to make something.
Congratulations. No, really, that is a great thing to do, and I'm sure you feel so empowered by doing it, and now you're sharing it with the world. People can find out about it on your website, which you're a smart marketer, too, because you have everything is the same. It's katiehinesmusic.com. You can find you on Twitter at Katie Hines Music and on Instagram at Katie Hines Music, so I think that's very smart of you as well. But
thank you.
What about performing? You, Well, it's important because it's important to find people. We know this from last week when we had trouble tracking down our guest music last week. But anyway, what about performing? Now, you have that in you, too, I think, naturally, because you had the acting gene or the acting bug for a while. So you translate that.
Yes.
You like to perform, and what are your options for performing now?
I love performing. It's one of my favorite things. I still, to this day, I have probably sung in front of, over the years since I was a little girl, thousands of people, but I still get nervous. And that first note is like, this adrenaline pumping thing. But it's so fun. Like even the nerves are fun. And right now I'm just doing some local shows. I play at a couple of bars and cafes around Los Angeles. Something that I'm really striving to do, and part of this is having the means to do it and the money to be able to go and play other places. My next thing that I want to do is to do a West Coast, or at least a California West Coast tour. Just go up to Santa Barbara, do a couple of small towns in between down in San Diego. There are like 1,000 venues in the Gaslamp District. And I just really want as many people to hear my music as possible. And, yeah, I love performing. So touring in the future would be just a dream for me.
Good for you. That's going to be very important for you, I'm sure, as you continue to
yeah.
grow. And, of course, if you have your digital, your online life, hopefully people will see you. And maybe some people
yeah.
will want to book you for their clubs, too. And that's always a great thing. That's the beauty of being able to put it out there, and you have a finished product that you
Absolutely.
Can showcase to the world. And I feel good things for you because you have great positive energy. You just got to keep it up and keep yourself surrounded
Thank
by positive
you.
People. And keep the discipline.
Yes.
As you said, you're starting – what an example you're giving to a lot of people at whatever level they're at. Really, the message here is follow your passion, and you have to work it, though. It's not just – it's not going to do it for you. You have to work
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that is one thing that I've learned. I moved here 5 years ago, and I think a lot of people move to big cities, especially like L.A., and they're like,
yeah.
well, if I don't make it in a year, then I'm moving back. Well, you can't – it can happen. You can meet the right person in the first 3 days that you're here if luck has you. But it's just one of those things where I decided that I wasn't going to give up, and it didn't matter how long it takes me. And I might go to other cities one day. I could end up in Nashville or Austin or who knows, Timbuktu. But I decided that I was willing to put in a lot of time for this. And I think that that's important for people not to give up after 1 year or even limit themselves to that.
Yeah, maybe not put that parameter around it. Absolutely. That is fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm sure they have a very burgeoning music scene in Timbuktu. You might want to...
oh, yeah. I'm not going to do a West Coast tour. I think I'm just going to do a Timbuktu tour. So...
And I think the story you had, your mom drove out with you, you said at the beginning of our conversation,
yes.
to L.A.,
yes.
I think there's a road movie in there. I don't know if you saw the movie with Barbara Streisand. And
oh, yes. Yes. We listened to a lot of ABBA.
So how did mom get back? She drove back by herself, or she flew back? And
She flew back. We found me an apartment, and she had to go back to work, and so she had to go back, and I was just kind of, that was the most daunting part was, it was all well and good, driving across the country with my mom. It was definitely a bonding experience, but once we got there, I had never been to L.A., so it was all brand new to me, and that was when it got real. Like, I was, I'll never forget, I didn't have a mattress yet, and I was sitting on my hardwood floor. I had a really cute first apartment, had hardwood floors, it was really cute, but I didn't have anything yet, and I called my friend Ashley, and I was just like, I cried for the first time. Like, I realized, okay, my life is not, I am not in Alabama anymore. Like, that is for sure. And so, all is well now, obviously. I did get a mattress and felt much better after that.
And probably
so,
gave you a lot of material for your songs, too, I'm sure.
Yes, it did. And it was, now I've got this very enriched life, I think, here. And I've met so many wonderful people from all over the place. And it's wonderful. So I'm really
excited.
Right,
You're a full-fledged certified city slicker now. Is that what you're telling,
yes,
telling the world?
Yeah, I like to think the city slicker.
Katie, hi. This one I'm talking with you. We're going to leave you with one more song. This one's called Escape. I guess you can't escape. And we certainly don't want to escape from your music. Please find more about Katie at her website, katiehinesmusic.com. You can find her, as we said, on Twitter and Instagram, also at Katie Music, Katie Hines Music. I hope you come back and see us. I suspect we're going to be hearing a lot more from you and about you. Katie, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, I hope so. Thank you so much, Amy Beth.
You're very welcome. Here's Katie Hines on the Amy Beth Darkwi Show. Stick around.
If I can only whisper the tune and shut my eyes, I'll go to where you're mine. It's all that I can do. Don't leave. There's nothing like the melody that I hear when you're around, and there's no richer sound. It brings me back to you.
After these brief words from our sponsors.
Chock full of nutshells at Heavenly Coffee, Heavenly Coffee, Heavenly Coffee. Chock full of nutshells at Heavenly Coffee. Better coffee a millionaire money can't buy.
Some
Sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't. Almond Joy's got nuts, mounds don't. Almond Joy's got real milk chocolate, coconut and munchy nuts too. Mounds got deep dark chocolate and chewy coconut. Sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't. Peter Paul, Almond Joy's got nuts, Peter Paul, mounds don't.
Because
sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't.
Have you heard, there's a thing called radio? And you hear things through the air?
Attention, you are conducting a broadcast in direct violation of FCC Rule 27. Pull over.
I'm not going down without a fight! I'm the voice of the river man!
Thank you for calling Investigation. Destin speaking. May I help you?
Yeah, it's one of those days. The gremlins are at it again. Hey, welcome aboard. It is the Amy Beth Arkley Show. Welcome back. I believe we have Ed Opperman on the line. He is the cyberspace involving all kinds of big cases. Tiger Woods, the dad of Sarah Palin, and even the Clinton trial. I think this is Ed. Hey, Ed, is that you?
Yeah, that's me.
Well, how are you,
Amy? Yeah, I'm pretty good. There's some pretty loud music going on.
Yes. We're trying to shut down.
Yeah.
Okay, there we go.
Oh, there
you know, sometimes those technical gremlins get you. What can you do? Ed, welcome to the show. As we said, you are this very interesting character, one of the four founders, really, in the digital movement, digital footprint movement, an investigator who can follow people around. So as I told my listeners, if you're up to no good, you don't want Ed Opperman on your back. You have been involved in a bunch of high-profile cases, from Tiger Woods' divorce to a case involving Todd and Sarah Palin. The Zimmerman case, you had an involvement in the initial trial. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah, even before the trial. What happened was, as a private citizen, I was watching TV, and I saw the HLN reports on the Zimmerman trial. The Zimmerman, before he was even arrested, and I heard the 911 tape call like everyone did. I saw Jane Velez Mitchell talking about how this is all a case of racism and hoodies and shooting unarmed people and stuff like that. And I says, oh, boy, listen to this. So when I heard the 911 tape, I knew something was fishy because I do a lot of criminal defense work, and I obtain those 911 tapes all the time. So what I did was I went and I got the I submitted a Freedom of Information Act request to the Stanford Police Department, and I got a copy of the 311 tape, the full 311 tape. It's a 4-minute 13-second tape in the
this
actual.
You're talking about when Zimmerman first called to make the complaint.
Yeah, he was calling up, and he thought he saw something suspicious in his neighborhood, and he called up. And the tape you hear on TV is barely 2 minutes, and it sounds like you hear Zimmerman getting out of the car and chasing somebody, running after somebody, and the next thing you know, there's a shooting. But in reality, if you listen to the full tape, Zimmerman's back in his car. He's talking to the operator for a long period of time. He says he doesn't know where the guy went. He's afraid of the guy. And could the police hurry up and get here? He doesn't want to say his address out loud. So when I got a hold of that tape, I contacted my friends over at HLN because, you know, I know a lot of those hosts over there and producers and stuff. And I got the tape for him, and I sent it over to one of the producers, and we thought we were going to do a whole show about it and present the whole fair story But in the end, they didn't. They kept along with their one-sided presentation of the facts of their case.
Interesting. Okay. So now that the case is over, sort of, although it may still go into other realms, whether it's federal charges and certainly a civil lawsuit and everything, you also, George Zimmerman is back in the news. He can't stay away from the drama, apparently, whether he's coming unhinged or what, we're not sure what it is. But he has this thing going on with his estranged wife, and he had the skirmish with the iPad, which, according to authorities, it's pretty much a done deal. No charges are filed on either side because they say they can't recover the data on that iPad. But I think you told me in an email last week that you think, actually, it will be recovered. Why do you think it can be, will be, and they may be wrong on this?
Yeah, I have no doubt that they can get that the video off that iPad. The whole thing's very interesting because in a typical, I do a lot of domestic violence defense work, and actually on both sides, we recover text messages to demonstrate and create evidence to show that there was threats over text messages, and also too we'll take the other side too and show that there weren't threats or that the text messages were faked. Now in the case of the iPad, the information on that iPad was never deleted. So it's still on the hard drive on the iPad. Now we know they can. Now if you can power up that iPad, you can recover the videos from. That's no problem at all. Pretty much.
Well, why are they claiming they can't do it?
Well, because I can tell you why. Because there was physical damage to it. Okay, and then probably they can't get into the data port. They can't get the data port cable in there. See, what they said was, if you listen carefully, they're saying that they can't do it at their station over there in the little St. Mary, you know, police station down there. A lot of small police departments can't do this kind of stuff. They have to send it out. So it wouldn't be a big deal to send that out and remove the hard drive, place it to another device, and then back up that information. Yeah.
It sounds like they're not going to
bother. And the reason why I know it powers up is because they asked the ex-wife for the password. So how would they know there was a password on there if they couldn't power it up?
But I wonder why they're not pursuing it. Is it just because both sides have said they don't, you know, because Shelley Zimmerman kind of backed away and said she didn't want to pursue it? Is that kind of, you know, the lawyers got involved and suddenly it was kind of smoothed over or whatever?
That's
so
a good question.
You see that a lot,
because, you know, in 2013 in these domestic violence cases, when the police show up, somebody gets arrested. You know, it's really an epidemic that there's so many people. And forget it, if you're in the middle of a divorce, someone's definitely going to get arrested when the police show up for domestic violence accusations. So in this
case, not a good idea for a man who just he was exonerated from the murder of the young kid, but he did actually kill someone. He admitted to killing someone. Probably not a great idea for this guy who seems a little unstable to be walking around with a gun, and certainly not if you're involved in a divorce, and obviously a contentious one, to go to your ex-wife's house or your ex-wife's father's house or whatever to also be strapping heat. I don't understand why this man is walking around with a gun, but that's another that's a story maybe you don't want to get yourself involved in, but it just is perplexing to me.
Well, you know what? It would be really simple to get that gun away from him because now she has this incident. She could easily go down and get a protective order, and once you have a protective order against you, you can't possess a weapon. So there's a lot of strange stuff going on in this case that just don't make sense.
Yeah, exactly. That's why people are fascinated by it. I think though people would feel a lot safer if whatever you say about it and wherever side you fall on this, if he just didn't have the gun. And I think people give him poor advice, including his attorneys and his family, when they make comments like, well, he needs a gun more than ever. He also had a huge bodyguard with him. If you have a bodyguard, let the bodyguard have the gun. You don't need that both. I just think he needs to probably simmer down. There's something going on with him where he has to be in the news every other minute. He's got something going on between speeding tickets, or he was a Cape Crusader. He rescued somebody from a burning car. I mean, he's got something going on with him psychologically that being armed right now, I'm not saying forever. I understand he's got the Second Amendment rights. I'm not getting on the bandwagon for the Constitution, but I'm just saying it's probably not advisable for him to have a gun, and I wish his people who surround him would kind of give him that clue, you know, give him that advice. But
well, you know, his
we'll
lawyer just resigned.
Yes, I heard that. I heard that.
Yeah,
Marco Marin
resigned after that. Yeah.
He was quick to be on the scene of the case. On that incident, he showed up and he kind of smoothed things over. But apparently, well, I guess he's still representing him if there is going to be any kind of lawsuit going on. There's a lawsuit, I guess, that they filed against NBC because they edited the tapes and all that, supposedly alleged edited tapes. And I guess if there are more charges pending from this, whether it's the federal case or if there's a civil suit, he may be involved in that, in the Trayvon Martin case. But I think he's not going to handle the divorce or anything beyond that. because he may be kind of fed up also with George. I think the comment one reporter said, they said, well, what advice do you give him? And he said, pay me. So he's, you know, obviously is owed a lot of money. And so it's tough. I guess, does that happen a lot? Because you work with lawyers and clients. Do you see a lot of that kind of people are on your side, but then when it comes time, when the bill comes due and there's some drama between the, does there sometimes acrimonious splits between lawyers and clients? Is that common?
Yeah, it's very common, especially when, you know, because when you're involved in a criminal case and you're trying to help the defendant, and you're trying to keep a guy out of jail, you know, you'll go the extra mile. You don't expect payment right away. But then you do kind of hope that, you know, when you just got him, you saved him from a long sentence, that they'd remember you. I had one case. Oh, my God, now that you mention this. It was his grandfather, and the non-custodial mother of this little baby took off to Texas and ran away to Texas. It was a non-custodial parental abduction. And his grandfather hired me to find this baby. And we worked 24 hours a day, man, and we found this baby. Well, I sent him a bill for $50. Okay, and we had to, you know, at the end of the case, we had to run some plates, had some expenses, you know, and it was a $50 bill, man. He still hasn't paid me. Hey, but, you know, God bless him. At least we found the baby safe, right?
Found the baby. So you obviously, you didn't have, you knew these people didn't have a lot of money, so you weren't expecting to get paid a real payday. So you just figured
No. But a lot of times you don't expect a real payday, you know. And again, too, with these big high-profile cases, you know, like the Tiger Woods thing and that kind of stuff, and the Charlie Sheen thing, you get involved in those kind of cases, it's time-consuming. It's 24 hours a day. It's people calling, emailing, knocking on your door all day, you know, following you around. And no matter how much you get paid, it's not worth it.
But those cases, you definitely expect a big payday because they have big bucks, so it's good to have those people as clients, right? Or on the other side of it, if they get money from them and it's a divorce or whatever, you know. So you do expect a big payday from those kind of cases, I would assume. Yes,
sometimes,
why
yes, sometimes no. Yeah, my client in that whole thing with the Sarah Palin thing, you know, she was a prostitute, you know, and she was just got out of jail, and she was a victim in that whole thing, and we just did it out of the goodness of our hearts just to help her. You know, she's
written a book
since then, and yeah.
Now, what was the contention on that one, that she had an affair with Todd? Was that?
Yeah, she came forward. She was a prostitute in Alaska, and she one of her clients she had claimed was Todd Palin. And one day, you know, it was a continuing relationship with Todd Palin. And one day, she was a knock at her door. She was running her little prostitution business off of Craigslist. She was a massage therapist and giving these little happy endings at the end of the massage through Craigslist ads.
Yep.
And one day, yeah, I know, one day there's a knock at her door and there's 30 police officers at her door, FBI, DHS, Alaska PD, with machine guns raiding the whole place over a Craigslist prostitution scandal, okay? And she got arrested, and they questioned her about Palin and other politicians and other high-profile figures that she was involved in. And she pled guilty, and she got out of that. Then there was a lawsuit with the National Enquirer because she had taken 4 polygraphs of the National Enquirer, and they didn't want to pay her because what happened was is the Anchorage Police Department issued a press release saying that they had investigated this, all these allegations about Todd Palin and her computer and her hard drive and her cell phone, and they could find no evidence. But later on, the police chief of the Anchorage Police Department admitted that he didn't write that press release, that Sarah Palin's attorney wrote that press release, and he just issued it on his paperwork, on his letterhead. So he had never investigated anything. And the way that case pretty much ended, fizzled out, was the same day that I received all the hardware, all the computers and the cell phones and the paperwork and all the evidence from the Anchorage police evidence locker is the same day that Sarah Palin announced that she wasn't going to be running for president.
Ah. Was there a connection? We don't know, right?
Well, that story is so bad.
It's
so black, yeah.
I was just going to say, I would love you to take the credit, Ed, and you can have the credit, but I pretty much predicted as soon as she quit the governorship that she wasn't going to run for president, because there was no way that if you're going to quit midway stream governorship, anybody's going to take you seriously. So these other scandals maybe just bolstered the idea that she should just stay a media personality. But, you know, if you want to take credit, Ed, I'd love you to have the credit.
Okay, great. You can send me cards later.
I'll send you the credit. Yeah, no extra charge.
Yeah.
But so how did you get the heck into this? Because you have an interesting background. Did you always want to be an investigator? I know you've done other things, but tell us how you got into this whole thing and the whole digital arena for you.
Well, the digital arena didn't come up till much later, but the original, I tell you, I was into a lot of stuff as a young guy. But I met this private investigator in Brooklyn. He's a forensic investigator. He did fingerprints and ballistics and handwriting analysis and all this stuff like that. And I went into his office one day, and I just saw all these diplomas and certificates on all of his wall, and he had guns lying around. You know, he's just such a cool guy. And he was working on all these big organized crime cases in New York City. Some of the biggest ones, man, like the Commission trial and the Pizza Connection trial and the Carmine Persico trial. And so at the time, I was able to get information from a phone company. I could get copies of people's phone bill and through a source I had in the phone company. So if you gave me someone's unlisted phone number, I can come back to you with a list of all the phone calls dialed from that phone, their name, their address, their social security number, and their work phone number, and sometimes even their bank account number. So that kind of information was worth gold back in those days. You didn't have websites selling this kind of information back in those days. So I set up a little business as an information broker, and I set up a little office in this PI's office, and I made a really big name for myself really quick, meeting all the big lawyers in New York City, all the big civil rights lawyers like Kunstler and Kuby and Lefcourt, and all the big mafia attorneys, man, like La Rosa and all those guys. I really, really made a lot of really good connections at an early age. But then I went on to do other things, like you said, you know, and came back into this around 2000. I was in the beeper and cellular phone business, too, so I had a little background with cell phones. I knew how to program phones and download data from phones. But when I got into this PI business, again, full-time, was around 2000. Me and my buddy, in fact, my partner was ex-NYPD Harbor Aviation, and he was the cop that you see in that helicopter when the second plane hits the tower on September 11th. He was in that helicopter. Yeah. His report was written into the 9/11 Commission report. Great guy. He has great stories, that guy. Forget it. He was the last guy on that plane because he did Harbor. He was a scuba cop, you know, Harbor Aviation, helicopters and swimming and the boats, you know. And he was the last guy on that plane with Sully. Remember when Sully landed the plane in the river in New York?
Yes.
He was the last guy on that plane. Sully said he was the last guy, but my buddy was right behind him. So we set up the business to do an employment screening for UPS, and we were doing thousands of those. And then we had a full-blown PI business going, and then I hooked up with these guys who were right off the field of Afghanistan. They had just been running around there looking for bin Laden, and they did all the cell phone forensics. And I hired all of them. I was using them to do my cell phone forensics. What I did was, see, around that time, people were doing computer and cell phone forensics for, like, murder trials and, you know, a lot of drug cases, too. A lot of DEA cases do cell phone and computer forensics. But I was the first guy to say, hey, we can use this to investigate infidelity for the average person. Like, the average person who thinks that their husband or wife is cheating on them, they can send me that phone and we can recover the deleted text messages and do a real quick report and send it back real fast without getting involved in a big, long trial. So I pretty much came up with that all on my own.
Interesting. Very interesting. And people can find out more about it if they want to get involved at your website, emailrevealer.com, by the way. You have some fascinating stories. I mean, I see maybe a book or a movie even from this. Do you ever think about who would play you if there was a movie version made of your life or part of your life?
You know who I talked to about doing a movie and a book? Sonny Grasso, who was the cop in The French Connection. And he's done all those movies, you know. When he heard my story, he loved it, man. That would be my dream come true, to have Sonny Grasso produce a movie about me. And now to play me in a movie nowadays, I don't know, maybe Leonardo DiCaprio? I can't remember his name.
You're talking Johnny Depp, who did Donnie Brasco?
I think he could do it. Yeah, the same kind of character, I think, you know. But I'm thinking of that guy that was one of the Backstreet Boys or the, you know. I can't remember. He's from Boston, you know, the Boston guy.
Oh, Wahlberg. Mark Wahlberg?
Yeah, there you go. Mark Wahlberg, yeah. I think he could do it.
New Kids on the Block, not Backstreet Boys, but that's okay.
Right, New Kids on the Block. Well, that's almost, I'm getting old.
Yeah, Mark Wahlberg, yeah, he's got that gritty thing. Yeah, right. He could do that. It's a very fascinating story. You're a colorful character, Ed. Of course, you can't reveal to us what you're working on, but, I mean, celebrities sometimes, you just get these cases from different lawyers, or celebrities themselves come to you, or how do you get your work from the high-profile cases?
Well, you know, a lot of them, you just word of mouth, you know. First thing when I started going public about these things was the Howard Stern situation, where I did some jobs for Gary Delabate, the producer of the Howard Stern show. That's when I first got into the news and people started hearing about me and I started talking about things. Then I got hooked up with this agent who was the agent for all the Tiger Woods mistresses and for the Ashton Kutcher mistress. I met a lawyer through her that was the lawyer for Capri Anderson, who was the girl that got beat up by Charlie Sheen in that hotel room. Little by little your name gets around, but there's a lot of stuff I can't talk about, like you said. Are all, you know, public stuff, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you don't want – it's great that you're talking to us, but on the other hand, I don't know if that will hurt your business if people think you're going to, you know, reveal their secrets or anything like that. So you do have to straddle that fine line. Do you ever cross paths with Lori Allred, for example? Because she seems to be at the ready anytime there's a scandal for a stripper.
Yeah, she was involved in all the Tiger Woods stuff. You know, she's the one that got the ball rolling. Yeah. I was at that press conference in California when what's her name? When the girl started crying, I forget her name though.
I don't know. I can't help you with. But interesting life. Very fascinating to talk with you, Ed Opperman. Thank you so much for joining us. I know you're a busy guy. You got all kinds of things going on, and people want to find out more. As we said, head to your website, emailrevealer.com, and check out. You have a book too, right? How to be a successful private investigator. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, How to Succeed as a Private Investigator, and it's a book not just for other PIs, but it's also for people who want to get into the business and all that kind of stuff. And it's also available on my website, too, on emailrevealer.com.
Ed Opperman, I hope you come back and see us again. Thank you so much for your insights and your colorful analysis. I appreciate it.
Anytime. Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Ed Opperman. Check him out, emailrevealer.com. Hey, it is the end of the Berkley Show, 347-857-4505. If you want into the mix, we'd be glad to talk with you. We're going to check into our Inspiration Challenge, Inspiration to Action Challenge. That's next. Hi there, welcome to the show. Thanks for waiting. You have a question or comment? Hello? Hello? Okay, try back again. We'll talk to you later. Again, 347-857-4505 if you have a question or a comment. We really have an issue with the phones these days, are we not? I don't know. Thanks again to Ed Opperman for coming by. What a colorful character he is. He's got some stories to tell. Indeed he does. Hey, are you taking the Inspiration to Action Challenge? You know how we did this last week. It's sort of kicking up the Journal Challenge a notch or two or three or six. In the Journal Challenge, you get yourself a notebook and you just kind of do stream of consciousness writing for 20 to 30 minutes in the morning or the evening, your choice, to kind of get your creative juices jump-started and see what comes out and where you want to go with your projects and your life. But I'm giving you some specifics. Last week, what I asked you to do, and you can, if you didn't start it last week, start it this week. Every day, just write down three things. One thing that inspires you, one thing that brings you sheer joy, and one thing for which you are grateful. Each day, one thing. Now, some people, once you start writing, you get a little list going. That's okay, too. Just see how that does for you. If it elevates your mood, changes your mood, makes you think about different things differently. Because really, the key to getting yourself out of a creative funk or any kind of a funk is to jumpstart your engines and shift your mood, change the way you look at things. So that's going to help. What also helps is to set goals and then put together an action plan. So this week, make three goals. I want you to write down three goals that you think are reasonable that you can complete or at least get started on in the next 12 weeks. Write down three goals this week that you think you can get done reasonably in the next 12 weeks. Okay, so three goals. Just list the goals along with writing down each day your inspiration, things that give you inspiration, things that bring you sheer joy, and things that things for which you are grateful. Okay, try that. See if it works. We've got some great folks on the mailbag this week who have checked in who tell us that it's helping them, working for them. I did have one perplexing letter from a man named Jefferson. Is that his name? Jeff? Jefferson? Out in Louisville, Kentucky. He says, I am perplexed by this whole thing. I don't know if it will work, but by golly, I will try it. All right, Jefferson, try it. I'm sorry if it's perplexing you, but sometimes a little perplexing is good. Try it, see if it works, and please keep us posted. And you know what? It's not a one-size-fits-all proposition. It doesn't work for everybody. I get that. I understand that. But I'm hoping it'll help you. And by all means, reach out to the website if you have any creativity coaching questions. It's amybetharkaway.com. Click on the contact icon. I will be back in touch with you. Hey, last week we spoke with a very lovely young man, up-and-coming recording artist Ra. And unfortunately, we had a little difficulty getting his music to us from his publicist, but I did track it down on his website. It's rawunscripted.com, by the way. And here is one of his samples. It's called Submarine. Give a listen to Ra on the Amy Beth Arkley Show.
Off your robe, secrets to the flow, giving you that loving down, nothing to make you flow. I'm trying to break a record, girl. You're wet enough for diving, girl. You know it's going down while it's going down. Best you ever had, girl. Got you feeling bad, girl. Kitchen to the bed. Calling me a submarine as I'm diving deeper, deeper.
As I'm diving deeper, as I'm diving deeper, sinking down.
Amy Bedorgui Show and Submarine. What a great sound he has, and what a delightful young man he is. He joined us last week, so thank you, Ra. Find out more about Ra and his music at rawunscripted.com. And Katie Hines, also a fabulous young up-and-coming indie singer-songwriter. All these young, talented folks in the world, and not-so-young talented folks in the world. Never too late to pursue your dreams. Get out there and do it. Embrace your passion and work it. That's one of the things that we talked about with Katie today. You got to really work it and sometimes cajole the muse into coming into the world, and he or she will do it. I've seen it happen. I've seen it in my own life. But sometimes you really do have to just sit there and face the page. Not always easy, but try it. And that's what our Inspiration to Action Challenge is all about, trying to help you do that. Embrace the passion. Get yourself into a right space emotionally and mentally to embrace your artistic talents and all your talents and see what happens. So this week, what are you going to do? You're going to follow the Inspiration Challenge. Every day this week, write down one thing that inspires, one thing that brings you sheer joy, and one thing for which you are grateful. And also, during the week at some point, make a list of three goals, three manageable goals that you think you can achieve within the next 12 weeks. Okay? Do that. We'll talk about action plans next week. Hey, speaking of next week, or speaking of Friday, actually, we have another singer-songwriter in the midst, A.J. Jensen, a country singer who I think you're going to enjoy. I'm really digging her sound. She'll be with us on Friday. Also, the Free Flow Pop Culture Convo. Lots of things in the news that are interesting. I think, I'm pretty sure Bill Thompson, the former treasurer in New York City, is now supporting Bill de Blasio. I have to check on this. I think earlier today he is kind of saying he's not going to go for that recount, because remember during the primary last week there was a question of whether or not they would have a recount for the Democratic nomination. We'll find out more about that and see who will be the next mayor of New York after that big circus campaign with Anthony Weiner, who is officially long officially been out of the running on that one. So that's interesting. We'll keep our eyes on what's happening in Washington. A tragic day at the nation's capital. Apparently, I think it has wound down, but I saw one smattering of a press conference. I'm sure there'll be more later. Watch your local outlets, your cable news, internet outlets for upcoming details on that. So it's tough, the whole issue with guns and who this person was. We're not sure who the shooter was. Apparently, he was killed. Other people, hopefully, hopefully there were no fatalities. I know there are people injured, but hopefully they will recover. Find out more details on the news sites. But another tough day, indeed. I hope you find some inspiration wherever you're going and whatever you're doing, because it's important to stay inspired, stay as upbeat as you can. So sometimes that means you have to curtail your exposure to the news. We talked about that a little bit, too. Got some great folks coming up in the offing as well. Next Monday, we've got our post-Emmy Awards fall season TV show. It's the ultimate TV on the radio show with the Hollywood insider Kristen Burt. She'll be here. We hope you're going to get involved too. Easy to get involved in the show, by the way. If you'd like to be a guest, if you have a story to tell, we're always looking for compelling authors and filmmakers, musicians, theater impresarios, social crusaders. You know who you are. Hop over to the website. It's amybetharkowy.com. Click on the contact icon. Also, if you'd like to dish the local news, you know, the hot news, not local news, but the hot topics in the news and movies, TV, that sort of thing, you can also get ready and be one of our rotating band of media mavens for our Coffee Clatch editions. So stop by the website. Follow the show on the Blog Talk site. It's the Amy Beth Arkowy Show, and you can also follow us on Twitter at AB Writes. Show being brought to you today in part by Disney's Infinity, Old Navy, and the Oak Center for Lifelong Learning. It's never too late to embrace your passions and live your life's dreams. Indeed, that's what we're always talking about. Speaking of which, don't forget to drive safe, play nice, and dream big. We'll talk to you on Friday, thanks to Trudy and Aurora in the booth, ML at headquarters, the gremlin-filled day, and the old school yard. Have a good one.
Remember the days of the old school yard? We used to laugh a lot. Oh, don't you remember the days of the old school yard? When we had imagining and we had all kinds of things and we left and needed love, yes I do. Oh, and I remember you. Remember the days of the old schoolyard. We used to cry a lot. Oh, don't you remember the days of the old schoolyard? When we had simplicity and we had warm toast for tea and we left and needed love, yes I do. Oh, nice to remember you.
third-time caller. Hey, welcome to the show.
Hi there. First of all, I just want you to know I was not the person that hung up before.
Okay, thank you.
And I had a question. I had a question. I just wanted to know about Ed Opperman. I kind of missed it. Was very curious to know if he felt that the iPad could be recovered from Mrs. Zimmerman.
Well, he did. You missed that part. He said
I missed
actually
that part,
he
and I wanted to know if he felt that it could be recovered.
He believes that it could be because they found that they could get into it because they needed a password, and he thinks they can, but they probably can't. What he said was they probably can't do it at their little St. Mary's Police Department. They'd have to send it out somewhere. But apparently, I don't think they're going to do it because both parties have just sort of said, don't bother, and I guess the police are going along with that, it seems, although who knows, maybe they will send it out. But he does definitely believe it will be recovered.
Yeah, because I think it's like even with computers, nothing is really lost forever.
Exactly. Okay. If you have the right equipment and the right
I missed that. I had to attend to something else, and I missed that. So I wanted to correct that. But I did want you to know that it was not me that hung up on you.
Yeah, you didn't hang up on me. I appreciate that. Well, I think they waited on hold for a long time. That's why I was surprised they hung up. But, you know, sometimes it happens, and sometimes we have gremlins in the system. So I cast no aspersions on anybody, and I appreciate your call, and I appreciate your listening.
Well, I'm always listening. It's a terrific show. Keep up
the good
work.
Thank you so much.
Work.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm going to try.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right. Thank you. Always appreciate it. Love to hear from the fans, even if you call after the show is officially over. That's like an addendum. Or they call it, you know, overtime, like Bill Maher and overtime. So we're going. I'm out of here. I promise I am.
Bad grades are meaningless. You know, they're like parking tickets. I mean, they mean nothing. Just laugh because they're silly.
You know, they're silly little nothings. Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. Don't know much about geography. Don't know much trigonometry. Don't know much about algebra. Don't know what a slide rule is for. But I do know what it was is to. And if this one could be with you, what a wonderful world this would be. Now, I don't claim to be an A student, but I'm trying to be. For maybe by being an A student, baby, I can win your love for me. Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French.